Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show is coming up right next.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show, talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail. Hey, everybody, welcome. It is so great to have you in what we call our good news segment. And you know, this segment's really a little bittersweet, and I just want to talk about it. Many of you have heard both me and Ellen and several other hosts talk about the launch of our addiction recovery channel. And you've asked me why. Why that one, Pat? You have 10 channels which you're launching, you're expanding. The women's channel came first, and now you're talking about the addiction recovery channel second. Well, I don't need to explain that to you because my guest today will explain that to you. We have passed a level in the United States, can't talk for the world, but we have passed a level beyond anything any of us thought we could even record in the world of addiction. And it doesn't matter how many movies you make about opioids. It doesn't matter how much coverage you have. You know, we watch what's going on. And yet the bottom line is, what are we doing to save lives? Today, joining me here today is an amazing individual. This is not a conversation for Lorraine. This is actually a purpose and a passion. Lorraine Martin, President and CEO of National Safety Council, is joining me here today because this is where we have to be helping to save lives from opioid overdoses. And I don't say that lightly. And what I will say about it is it happens times where people that are using don't even know that they've entered that zone. Lorraine, thank you for joining me here today.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Pat.
I want to talk to my first point. And, you know, my mom passed away as a drug addict. And back then, they didn't call them opioids, right? They called what they called them. When doctors used to write prescriptions for women that were too noisy, barbiturates. I don't even know what we called them. But even back then, there was a lack of awareness. And the individual that was taking these drugs wasn't even aware. What are you finding? Is that still the case?
It still is the case that we don't have enough information about the drugs that we're taking, whether they're prescribed or otherwise. And that's a place that the National Safety Council has been working for at least over a decade, is to help with education of what you're being prescribed, what it might do to you, and if there are alternatives, because there actually, in many cases, are alternatives to opioids to help with inflammation, to help with pain. So just so much more. And yes, sometimes we don't know what we're being given, whether it's a prescription or, unfortunately now, with drugs that might just be something your buddy gives you at work. You hurt your knee, you want to stay on the job. They say they have a prescription for something that is a painkiller. They hand it to you. It's laced with fentanyl, one pill, and one pill can kill. So there's just so much awareness that we have to have around this, because at this point, Dr. Pat, we're losing 200 people a day to an overdose in our country.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would venture to say, to check, fact check me on this, but I would venture to say that that is understated, because the amount of information you can get, or even the amount a family wants to, you know, provide you with, that puts an individual in that situation. But you mentioned something, and I want to get back to it. The numbers are staggering, right? You know, we're talking about death, but there's steps before death that we're just not paying attention to. But I want to get back to one thing you said. Fentanyl, oh my goodness. I don't even know how to talk about fentanyl, because it's being laced in almost everything coming from the street, because it is so addictive, right?
It's addictive and it's very deadly as well. And you don't know what kind of concentration you're getting, even if you do know that there's something having to do with fentanyl in the drugs that you're taking. You don't know the dosage. And it's very, very lethal. Like I said, it really can be one pill and somebody can be on the floor in an overdose. And if you don't know how to respond, or you don't have emergency attention nearby, they could lose their life on the spot. One pill.
Yeah. I mean, let's talk about your mission here, because we're not just talking about the problem here. We're also talking about a solution and what you all are doing. You know, this is a great conversation for you and I to have, and I'm sure we've had so many of them. But underneath this, there is really something new, something that can be done. Tell us about that.
There is. So the National Safety Council has been around for 110 years, and we look at what's causing people to get injured or lose their life. And right now, the number one cause of unintended death, both in our world and in our workplaces, is overdoses. So something happened very recently, and that is that the FDA approved for over-the-counter, you can just go to your drugstore and get it, to get what's called an opioid overdose reversal medication or drug. And you might have heard some of the brand names, but the generic is called naloxone. And it is available now so that you can have it at your workplace, in your home, in your schools. Lots of programs across the nation to make sure it's available for you. It's very easy to use. You cannot hurt someone, which is fantastic. And it literally can save their life, give them a second chance of their would be dead otherwise. And now you have done what's needed to avert the emergency and get that person back onto the road to recovery. So the over-the-counter designation by the FDA is key. And then our awareness is that workplaces need to be part of this equation. 9% of the deaths in workplaces are overdoses. In some states, Dr. Pat, California, it's closer to 20% yeah. of the workplace fatalities are overdoses.
Yeah.
We have to get this to be a workplace response. And that's why we've created our Respond Ready Workplace.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up, because we don't think about this. And yet, in the latest movies and series that have come out, clearly when you look at the people involved in those, and those were true stories, the event happens in the workplace, whether it be an entrepreneur or it be, you know, somebody that did something. I mean, these were things that happened, excluding sports. Let's exclude sports for a minute, because that's a whole nother category. We could do a whole hour on that. But we're talking about a range where people are really, they want to keep their lives in order. They want to be able to work. And this by far is the trickiest solution they could apply. One, it gives them the relief they need immediately. And then what it does, it gives them the disbelief that they get from now using it. So what can we do to make all of us aware with employers? Because this, I think, has got to be key.
Yeah. And whether it's a substance use issue that someone has, or whether it's just, like I said, one pill that someone gave you, people have jobs and they're a big part of their day is at the workplace. And thankfully, that means they're most cases around other people. And so when they get into that emergency, being prepared at the workplace to take action is really important. We know that workplaces have to keep their people safe, and they want them to go home at night in the same condition they came in. We worry about power outages, heart attacks, hurricanes, violence in the workplace. We have to make sure that workplaces are addressing a potential overdose in the same way. And because this medicine is now available, the training is very simple. I was just literally at Congress 2 weeks ago training with one of the universities in DC, staffers and members on how to use naloxone. And it just is raising awareness that Congress is a workplace too, right?
Yeah.
And everyone needs to make sure that they know how to do this. And one of the other great things is that when people have jobs and they learn skills, they take them with them. They don't leave the fact that they know how to put a tourniquet on because they learned it at work when they leave the plant, right? If they need to do a tourniquet on the baseball field, they know how to do it. Same thing here. They're going to know how to do naloxone administration, and they're going to know that they need to have it available wherever they are. And this is a force multiplier for workplaces to really lean into this. And that's what we're calling on them to do.
And I love that you're doing that, because, you know, when I think about this, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, I think about government run occupations and having a family that, you know, spent and dedicated their lives to the police force, et cetera. I mean, these are organizations that, you know, it does take a state governmental initiative to be aware of it. But oh my goodness, you know, we're looking at ways, if those folks were get trained, not just about themselves, but if they were trained in the people that they're in front of, it would be a game. Look, I was one of the advocates for the Epi, you know, the injection to put on airplanes, because you never know when somebody is going to have an allergic reaction. And I know how hard that was to really get that moving, but to get that in schools, right? You know, you never know what's going to happen. How do we remove the stigma on this? Because we have to, I'm going to make up a word, destigmatize.
No, that's a real word, ma'am. Yeah, there's two things that we've seen as I've been talking to folks around the country. Stigma is one of them, that these are people, you know, that, you know, maybe we don't want to take care of, or that they, you know, they brought it on themselves. None of that is relevant if someone is dying in front of you and you can do something about it. And at the same time, as we've said, this is a disease, substance use disorders. And it's something that we need to treat and give folks the chance to recover and get back into the workforce, get back to their lives, and really helping folks take away that stigma. And specifically when we're talking about emergencies in front of them, to know you'd lean in if someone was having a heart attack and you had an AED on the wall, you need to do the same thing here and save the life. So that's really important. And the other one that goes with stigma is this issue of legality. And is somebody going to come after me? Same kind of world we went through with EpiPens and with AEDs, to ensure that there's good Samaritan laws. And most of the states do have protections, both for civil and criminal, for good Samaritan laws, for naloxone specifically, such that you should do what you can do. If you're doing your best effort, and thankfully naloxone can't hurt anyone, then you are covered and you should lean in and take that action.
Yeah. I mean, I worked with the Congress people in my state around the VA, and what are we doing for our vets? Because it is a serious issue. And it's even more stigmatized, even asking for help. So you have, your plate is full. I want to ask you, how do people find out more of this, and how can the public support you? That's really the question here.
Yeah, where you can get resources is from nsc.org/, and for this issue specifically, Respond Ready. So nsc.org/Respond Ready. But nsc.org has all kinds of resources on all kinds of safety related issues, from the workplace really to any place. And we have been providing support for drug-free workplaces, for recovery-friendly workplaces, all of the aspects of this very holistic perspective that a company needs to take to support their employees. But what can the community do? The community can get aware. They can lean into this, try to avoid that first sort of stigma. This isn't me. This isn't my family. These must be, you know, other kinds of people. No, this is everyone. And Dr. Pat, at this point, when I'm talking to folks, there's very few people who don't know a story. They don't know something, whether it's a kid in their high school, in their town, someone at work, a family member. With 200 people a day, this is hitting all of our lives. And so my message to everyone is get educated, learn more, open your mind to understanding that this is something that you could save a life, and understanding what it takes to do that. And it is making sure you have naloxone available with you wherever you are, and that you're trained to use it, and that you are ready to do so.
Yeah. I know these are short interviews, but I must bring up one more place, because this is what I see. I work in the recovery field, as you know, this is my passion, volunteer. The hardest thing to watch are what happens to young people, you know, kids in high school or even middle school. You know, it's the hardest thing. I mean, just a couple of situations right now, it's very hard. What do we need to do to get this in the school system? Because I believe that's the largest body of, I think it's one of the large, you know, next to police, fire, those organizations that were United States, all over, right? But the school system, where we're starting to see these numbers that are actually recorded go through the roof. What can we do to have a conversation with the educational system?
Yeah, and we need to have it in every corner of our lives, and schools are certainly one of them. Having naloxone there, if there's an emergency, a lot of school systems have already leaned into that, which is just fantastic. You're working with their human health, whatever the organization is in their state. When I was at Congress, I also got a chance to go to a meeting at the White House recently, and there are actually recovery high schools. I wasn't aware of that.
Yep.
They're set up just for folks, kids that are struggling with this, and they are amazing. And I don't know if you have some in your state, wherever your audience happens to be, but reaching out and understanding if those resources are available so that students can perhaps get into a new environment, they are game changing. And it was just amazing to hear the stories of the students now in recovery and where they were headed. And now they are going to go off to college and law degrees. It was just, you got to intervene, and you've got to have the resources there to help somebody change whatever the dynamic is that's putting them in the situation that they're in. We don't deal directly with schools very much. We're primarily a workplace channel,
yep.
But But our workers have kids and their parents. And so getting this information to them so that they can bring it home into their schools is also sort of a force multiplier for us.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, for all of you out there, especially my teacher friends, you are a workplace. Just want to remind you. I just want to remind them of that just in case they're like not on board with that. But, you know, I want to thank you for this. This is important. And I love that you brought up the recovery high schools. I so love that you brought that up because there's something brilliant about what happens in an environment where you're around people that are like you. You know, you don't stigmatize each other, but yet, you know, it's like, look, you can go for days without food or water, but you know, to go for a minute without hope is devastating and it's killing. I want to thank you today, but again, please give out the website and I'd love to know your personal message if I could.
Yeah, it's nsc.org/respondready. Everyone can save a life right now in our country if we're losing 200 people a day. Get trained, get aware, address whatever issues might be preventing you from looking at this issue. Because I will tell you, we can really turn this around one person at a time to give everybody their second chance at life.
Yeah. And if they have any questions, they can go to the website and ask you. Thank you so much for taking this on, but also thank you for paving the road for this, because workplaces are the hidden, what I call the hidden place for addiction. And we don't talk about them. It's almost as if we act like nothing is going on in the workplace. It's just nothing happening over there. It's either on the streets or in the schools. But if we look at this closely, you know, what we find is a very hidden and deadly situation that could be remedied by what you're doing. That's the key.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning us in, turning us on. We'll see you next time. Hey, everybody, welcome. I have to tell you, while I call this the good news segment, I want to tell you why I call it a good news segment, because every time I interview people like Dr. Nadine Abijadeh, did I get that right?
Yes.
My pronunciation's probably off. I want to say Abijadeh, but it depends on whether you're from France or Italy. Listen, this is a good news segment, but I want to tell you why it's a good news segment. Even though we're going to be talking about some things that are probably very personal to Dr. Nadine and me, we're bringing you information to educate, to talk about the importance, to talk about innovations. And when we talk about Liver Cancer Awareness Month, October, it is very important and it is very personal, because you're going to hear from Dr. Nadine and me why this touches our hearts. It's not just a conversation that you pull something off a shelf. This is something that's personal to people. This is something where we want to save lives. Dr. Nadine, right? Isn't that true for you?
Well, so I treat liver cancer, and I see so many patients that could have had such great interventions, but missed that window of opportunity because they didn't recognize they had some of the risk factors. And therefore, you just see patients who have more advanced disease rather than earlier, where more curative options would have been on the table.
Yeah.
So it's really important to say, like, please get the screening. It's very easy and it's non-invasive.
Yeah. I want to start with that, what you just said. I want to talk about what people need to know now. And what I mean by that, every time I do an interview like this, I like to bring people up to date, because things change so quickly that what you may have heard a year ago may not be up to date because the innovations, the science, the technology is changing. So give us a snapshot on where we are today and what people should really know when we're talking about liver cancer, which is a deadly disease.
Yes, it is. And so I'm going to focus on primary liver cancer, which is the cancer of the liver itself. And before, people used to associate it with alcohol or drugs, et cetera. It's not anymore. One of the main risks, especially in the United States, is the fact that people, if they have obesity, diabetes, metabolic syndrome, they can cause something called fatty liver, which can itself go into cirrhosis, or just even as fatty liver can cause liver cancer without cirrhosis. And the issue is people don't know this, and so they don't get the screening that's needed.
Yeah. And that's what I mean about the landscape changing. You know, once upon a time, we were only talking about a very isolated, how should we say, slice of the pie that was associated with either drugs, alcohol, combination of both. But now we're seeing the landscape change of people. you know, people have changed, their body shapes, their landscapes, their habits have changed. So this is an update that people need to be aware of. Can I ask you, what are some of the numbers on this? How alerted should people be in the increase that you're seeing?
So actually, if you look at HCC in the United States, about a third will be caused by the fatty liver syndrome rather than, and it's actually, if you look at the people who have fatty liver syndrome, only a minority will develop liver cancer, but there's so many people with fatty liver that don't even know they have fatty liver that it ends up by being a big proportion of people who have liver cancer is caused by fatty liver.
Yeah. And I see that's the thing that the reason I want to talk to you, because you see, this is the good news. The good news is if we can educate and update people and even make them aware when they go to their physicians, even for routine blood work, they can really be more and more aware. I want to take a minute. What is the best place for people to go to? What website for those folks right now for them to find out more about what you and I are talking about?
I mean, of course, there's the CDC, the American Cancer Society, all have information about how to, and the NIH too have information about liver disease, liver cancer, that is especially kind of made for patients, so that it makes it a little bit digestible.
Yeah. Now, I want to say something. You're the chief, congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
Of Interventional Radiology and Director of Clinical Research at the University of California, Irvine. Okay. So. Yes. This is a big deal. I went to school in California. I know when you come to do an interview like this, people don't know the depth and the breadth of what you are doing every day, what research is about, what the methodology is about, what the science is about. And I want to ask you a question directly related to that. What are you most excited about when you look out at the science and you think to yourself, oh my gosh, I can't wait to do this particular project because it will save lives? What gets you most jazzed when you think about that as a professional?
I think there's a couple of things that get me really, really jazzed. Some of them are combination therapy. So when we it takes seven things for cancer to develop, believe it or not, like seven mutations in the body. And so I don't think one intervention can help. And I think having multiple interventions with different ways to attack it is one of the things that gets me really jet. And there's a lot of research going on about that right now. And there's also some upcoming technologies where we're going to potentially be treating it completely non-invasively and in a way that also helps with the immune system so that we can really combine those therapies with all of it together. And I think that will, you know, there's a lot of technological device developments and also, you know, advances in the medications we can give that really have me very excited because we're going to be able to treat this in a way that's not toxic, but really very effective.
You know, I was asked about a couple of weeks ago during an interview, I get asked the oddest questions, but they asked me a question. They said, you know, Pat, if you could go back in time and become look at your profession and you're in your 20s, what would you study? And so what I say always shocks people. I said, I would become a doctor and I would study the research on nanotechnology. And they look at me like I've lost my mind. Like, what is that? But the reason I'm bringing it up is because you're sitting in the driver's seat for so much innovation, right? And at the bottom of this, your goal is to save lives, isn't it?
Yeah.
I never thought I would say saving lives and talk about liver cancer in the same breath because it wasn't too long ago where we couldn't. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes. But things that are evolving very rapidly and there's been significant improvements. So yes, there is.
Now, what do we want to tell people they need to be aware of? Now, I think folks always ask me after I do these shows, give me some symptoms. What should I be looking for? What are some signs outside of, please go get, is it blood work that they could get? I don't even know. You're the expert. Tell us.
So it's very simple. It's an ultrasound and blood work. And the sad thing is even people who have the very known risk factors like hepatitis C, hepatitis B, and alcoholic cirrhosis, only 24% of those are getting the 6 months ultrasound plus AFP, which is one blood work that every 6 months that's recommended by all the guidelines, including the American Association for the Liver Disease Study. So it's an ultrasound and then one blood work. And really, you don't want to wait till you have symptoms. I have some patients that told me, oh, like I had some pain, but it's very nonspecific and it's not really, you shouldn't, when you're getting symptoms with the liver, it's not good. So you want to do it before you have symptoms.
No.
But if you have diabetes, if you have if you have obesity, overweight, if you have metabolic syndrome, anything like that, just get your liver checked.
Yeah. I want to make a point. Your website, by the way, you know, the website we're sending people to is just like stellar. It is so good. But here's the thing I find when I talk about the liver, there, most of the people don't even know what its function is. And I think if people knew what the liver does and how important it is, let's talk a minute about that. Because I think if people knew that, they would treat it like their heart. like, right? If somebody says something about your heart, people are like, I'm going to the doctor. But let's just have a minute where we're telling people what this liver does for us.
I think one of the main thing it does is there's a lot of functions. One of the biggest ones is really to filter. I call it the filter of the body. Because whatever you eat is collected by the veins of the bowel, all gums together and goes into one big vein that goes to the liver, and the liver cleans it up. So the simplest and like the biggest function is acting like the filter of the body. But of course it regulates some things with diabetes. It has other functions, even coagulation, like how bad, if you cut yourself, how fast your blood clots. If your liver is sick, all of these things are going to start being off. And so it really does a lot, but doesn't get a lot of recognition. I agree.
It doesn't. And it's seriously important because there's so much that it does. And when things don't go right, you know, there are so many side effects we get, but we don't know. I mean, this is why I'm so excited about, I've lost family to this. I've lost friends to this. So I understand it. And I understand how important it is. But the innovations you're talking about, let's just remind people what they are and how they can speak with their physicians to get things checked. What do we want to tell people?
Make sure you tell them that you'd like to make sure that you're getting an ultrasound and an AFP. That's the little blood test to make sure that there's nothing underlying. And here's the other thing I have to say. People see things on ultrasound and then they're told, well, you don't have any of the risk factors, so don't worry about it. It's not a cancer. And they just get, you know, an ultrasound 6 months later and it's doubled in size. And, you know, they're like, oh, but you don't have any of the risk factors. Please, just if you see anything in your liver, get it properly investigated. I know people want to hear that it's the best because it makes you feel good. You're like, okay, no, the doctor said it's not cancer. But unless they went in there and got tissue and made sure it's not, there's no way to really be sure.
Yeah. And by the way, aren't we also educating our physicians worldwide now too? I mean, I think the burden is on us as patients to go in and be educated, but there's also a gap in education in certain physicians, and we just want to have everybody be on board, right? I mean, don't you find that part of your role, and of course your colleagues, is to make sure physicians, at least in the United States, but also globally, are aware now that we're not just talking about people that are at risk, that Hep C, you know, alcoholism. We're talking about something new that everybody should be made aware of, right?
Yes. And I think that there's been some studies that have actually, like epidemiology studies that looked at this. And a lot of times, as I was saying, even the 24% that I was talking about earlier for screening is in patients that are at risk and we're not getting the screening. And a lot of them is because the orders were not placed. And so some of the studies, several of them have concluded that there needs to be education on the physician side as well, because there's a lot of innovation and it's really hard if you're a community practitioner or general practitioner to keep up with all the innovations in all the different fields in medicine. It's easy for me to talk about the liver because that's my specialty, but everything else is. And so it's really important to have physician education that is targeted as well, so that they are aware of these things. I agree.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. Fortunately for me, I've had physicians that have made it my responsibility to walk. I mean, I have a doctor that you can't even walk in the room without you tell him where you think you are on the scale of symptoms. I mean, that's really, I think that's those are the physicians of the future and of the past. I want to thank you for today. I want to ask you a couple of questions. You know, what does this mean to you personally? I mean, you don't really sign up for a body of work like you have without having a real personal motivation.
I've lost family members to liver cancer. It wasn't primary, it was metastatic, is also a lot of, but it's still, it's really hard when it comes, you know, to the personal. And so that's partly why I'm motivated to really stomp it out.
I agree with you. I get asked questions, why have you started to expand and become an all positive talk network? Is because I've lost too many people for suicide. You know, if I can do something to change the landscape, so are you. I want to thank you. Please give out the website again. And then one last question. I'd love to know your personal message and what you'd like to leave us with today.
Well, I think my own personal message is, remember, you are your own personal advocate, and don't give up on yourself. And there's always hope, and there's always things we can do, and there's always innovation. Things are getting better. So, you know, and please look after your liver.
Thank you. Thank you. That website, one last time.
The American Cancer Society. There's also the National Institutes of Health with Have Educate. And there's one especially for patients. And then the CDC, of course, CDC.
Thank you so much, Dr. Nadine. Thank you for everything you're doing. And for all of you listening, we can't say it enough times. Please, you may have to educate your physician. You may have to ask questions. You may not like the answer you get. And then you may have to look for alternatives. Remember, your health comes first. We'll see you next time.